Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show, with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into the show in style. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the spiciest, the boldest, the most delicious hot sauce out there. It's made by a golf writer, and it's on every table in the Deep South. It should be on yours, too. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, welcome everybody to this U.S. Open Preview Show. It's great to have you. It's great to be talking about Erin Hills. We're going to have a terrific week from Wisconsin coming up, where you can read all of our articles on thegolfnewsnet.com and listen to the shows at thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. as well as at times on SiriusXM when it rotates in and out. And so we'll talk a little bit about Tiger Woods. We know that is the news du jour, but we're going to open the show with a guest that we are very grateful to have. He's one of the true great voices in golf, whether it was on the radio, on television, or in his writing. For decades, he has been one of the wisest mentors to young journalists and one of the great voices in the game. Please give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to Peter Kessler. Welcome aboard, Peter.
I am absolutely delighted to be with you. I'm a big fan. I know so much about you, and I'm honored to be in your company, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I'm very grateful for that. Okay, when a good guy like you says things like that, we know we're doing something right. So let's get right into the show. Erin Hills, a brand new golf course, modern, only 11 years old, only the third time since 1970 that we're going to see a modern age golf course. What can you tell us about it?
Well, its history is fairly unusual. There is a fellow by the name of Bob Lang who first purchased it in 2001 after a series of owners had held title to it previously. And he wanted to build a U.S. Open course, and it's 35 miles northwest of Milwaukee in an area that's called the Kettle Moraine that features lots of ridges and hollows from melting glaciers. And he spent way too much money to build the golf course, and it took him to the brink of insolvency, fractured his family. He hired a Herzden, Fry, and Whitman to design the golf course. Doak had wanted to do it, and he had wanted to call it Erin Golf Club, but it was never built. And the reason that they picked Herzden, Fry, and Whitman, who were not a household name, was because Lang liked the fact that Herzden had been a Green Beret. And it was an ideal site for an inland links golf course. And Lang tinkered too much during the construction process with Herzden, Fry, and Whitman. And he kind of kicked Whitman away because every time Whitman showed up at the golf course, Lang would have added three or four bunkers and they didn't fit. But the USGA saw the potential very early and decided they would hold the 08 Women's Public Links there. And Tiffany Joe won that, and they continued work on the golf course. And then the USGA said, okay, let's hold the 2011 amateur there at Erin Hills. And Whitten came back into the picture after the property was bought by a guy by the name of Andy Ziegler. Another guy, Steve Trattner, had found the land for Lang and then murdered his wife in 06 and is in jail for it right now. Stricker played the golf course in 06-07, really liked it. Lang had extended it to 8,348 yards, which is a lot longer than they will play it for the U.S. Open. But Ziegler came in. He paid $10 million for it. He built a new clubhouse. He made it walking only. They held the amateur there in 2011. Spieth made the quarterfinals, and Kelly Kraft would win the thing. And they have tinkered with it fairly extensively in conjunction with the USGA since then. And they closed the course back in the fall of last year and hasn't been open and won't be open again until the guys tee it up a couple of weeks from now. It features wetlands. It features a river. It has irregular land formations. If it plays soft, the longer hitters are going to have an advantage. It's got a course rating of 77.9, a slope of 145. It's a public course, lots of slope on the greens, and the thing's going to play about 76.93 yards for the Open, and is only the sixth public course to host a U.S. Open. Lots of wind, wide fairways, long, deep, thick, fescue rough, not tricky according to Jordan Spieth, which is the way he defined Chambers Bay, very tough bunkering. He said this is more rolling hills. It's not really parkland. It's not really Lynx land. It's a combination of the features that I described.
Now, one of the features is that the overall land plan is 652 acres, and that's one of the reasons that it was attractive to Mike Davis. The golf course sits on 300 acres, so there was plenty of room for everything that the U.S. Open brings to town, like the merchandise tent and Spectator Square and the media center and everything else. And as you said, it isn't a convenient place close to Milwaukee, a major Midwest center. And of course, Wisconsin and Minnesota go back and forth as one and two in the nation in having the most golfers per capita. And, you know, you may very well be able to say the greatest love of golf. I know that Oregon and Oklahoma and North Carolina might disagree with me, but no one can doubt the ardent and fervor of the Wisconsin golfers, especially when a major comes to town.
Yeah, there's no question. It's funny that that part of the country would be per capita the one with the most number of golfers if you include Michigan, and yet you think of all of the really great golf courses being really in the New York metropolitan area, Wingfoot and Baltusrol and all of the great courses on Eastern Long Island. I just played Friar's Head, built by Coren Crenshaw, and thought it was as good as anything I had ever played, and they just did Maidstone over again, and it's unbelievable, and Shinnecock is there, and National Golf Links of America, so it's an incredible place. The New York metro area, if you were going to pick one that you could only play golf in for the rest of your life, might be the place if it wasn't Oregon, given what's going on there. So the area that we're describing now as having the most golf courses per capita is really a surprise, also given the fact that the season is so short.
And the other good thing about Erin Hills is it solves the pesky problem the USGA has had about having a regular Midwest venue. They've tried a bunch of different places that just haven't worked. You know, they went to Medina back in the day. They tried Olympia Fields. They even talked about Cog Hill. But it got so bad that at one of the major championships, one of the USGA members said, hey, look, if you guys have any good ideas on a Midwest venue, shout them out. I put my hand up and said Oakland Hills. But, of course, you know, that's just too good an idea. Now, you also talked about how long the golf course is, and all four par fives are over 607 yards, but when I spoke with Ron Witten, he thought that they all could be reached in two by long hitters. In fact, he did say, though, that most of them might take a fairway metal to get there, maybe even 3-wood or 5-wood or something. But what can you tell us about the setup of the golf course, and what holes in particular might be interesting to watch?
Well, I think the course really changes its character so much as it goes through these different landforms. They've got blind tee shots on par threes. The 18th hole is well over 600 yards as a par five. The land slopes from right to left towards wetlands and left to right towards series of bunkers. It's a unique golf course that doesn't exactly feel seamless, but yet when you put all of the pieces together, it seems like it's going to be a great U.S. Open venue. It's going to call for long, straight tee shots, you know, and there's a few guys that you then think of, you know, in strokes gained total, for example, that ought to do particularly well there, who drive the ball a long way, like Dustin Johnson, who leads strokes gained total from tee to green, and John Rahm, who's second, and Ricky Fowler, who's next, and Kisner is number five, and strokes gained tee to green, not just total, which I just covered. Again, you've got Dustin Johnson and John Rahm and Sergio Garcia and Francesco Molinari in places one through five. And then if you look at driving accuracy percentage, you say to yourself, it's not going to come from this group because you've got Molinari and Stricker and Brian Stewart, who only his family has heard of, and Jim Furyk, who's too old now, and William McGirt, who could be a surprise. So I'm looking for guys who hit the ball a long way and whose strokes gained total are going to be the criteria for determining the champion. You know, Spieth is one of those players who seems to be able to get it done, even though tee to green, we don't think of him as being someone with particularly great statistics. He's short. He's a little bit crooked. The players on tour say that he squeezes the ball as opposed to compresses the ball, if there's a distinction.
And, well, that is the kind of thing that they are playing a game completely different than me.
Yes, me too. I mean, I used to be able to compress the ball a little bit, but I think it's going to be your usual cast of characters. You know, the golf course is not quite parkland like you would think of, say, as Winged Foot, and it's not a linksy golf course like Pinehurst Number 2 has become. It's kind of a combination of the two, so it's really going to be a question of keeping your ball in play, because what they've done is to get rid of Mike Davis's notion that he started in 05 at Pinehurst of graduated rough, where the closer you were to the fairway, the shorter the rough was, and the further away you were, the longer it got. But this year, just a couple of feet off of the fairway, this fescue, which grows like crazy, is 2 feet deep, and you're only going to be able to wedge out sideways. Now, there's an interesting point to be made about that, which is, if you can only hit a sand wedge out of the rough, that means you're going to hit it laterally into the fairway, and the chances are good that on your next shot, you're going to be able to put it on the green and one or two putt for your par or your bogey. When the rough is graduated and you can play shots from just off of the fairway in much shorter rough, you actually, in fact, introduce larger numbers into the equation, because now you can advance the ball, but you may be able to not put spin on it. So the control factor loses itself in the fact that all of a sudden you can find yourself in the front bunker, or you can squeeze the ball over the green, or you find yourself 60 feet from the hole on the wrong side of the green. So I think this is going to be more boring, in the sense that when we see guys in the rough, they're going to wedge out sideways. Well, like you think of Carnoustie in 1999. I remember Greg Norman just 3 or 4 feet off the fairway at Carnoustie, and he tried to hit sand wedge 10, 15 feet onto the fairway and went completely under the golf ball and missed it. So we're going to see a lot of very interesting golf, because there's going to be a lot of bogeys made from that deep stuff, much more than double bogeys, as if the rough were graduated. So I'm looking for a score, you know, that'll be, you know, roughly close to par, because I don't think the huge number is going to be introduced, because the options are going to be limited on your tee shot if you don't hit a good one.
Let's talk specifically about a couple of players before we go to break. You read my mind with some of the longer players, and of course the first name you have to pick is Dustin Johnson, the defending champion and someone who's had a phenomenal year so far, but the question is his health. What can you tell us about DJ?
it seems like he's going to be fine. You know, he's been able to hit balls. He's been able to hit them at full throttle. He's decided to limit his schedule leading into the Open. It doesn't seem like, based on all the reports that I've heard, that he is going to be handicapped by any problem with his back, and that he's feeling good, and he just went on an intelligent plan of rest, therapy, and skipping a couple of events to be at full throttle for the Open. So I expect him to be in Dustin Johnson form.
How about Rory McIlroy?
Well, you know, Rory's one of those guys like Jason Day, like Tiger years ago, who has spent a lot of time building up his chest in the weight room. And, you know, when you go all the way back to the 1950s and you think of Gary Player when he started to lift weights actually in 1960, because in 60, Gary Player couldn't reach the greens in two at Augusta National. So he worked out with a weightlifting Olympian in South Africa who told them, we're going to work on everything except we're not going to build up your chest. And in 61, Player was able to reach the par fives at Augusta National and ended up winning that championship because Arnold ended up making double bogey from the middle of the last fairway with a one
shot. Yep, that's right, on 18. They were congratulating him on winning, and then he took a six.
That's right, and Player was the beneficiary. And, of course, the next year it was Arnold who came back at the last minute, got into a playoff with Player, and ended up beating him, coming back again in the playoff to win. There was also a great amateur, Frank Stranahan, who used to carry his weights from tournament to tournament and would just laugh hysterically when the bellboys would take the weights out of the car and try to take them up to the second floor. but he didn't build up his chest muscles either. And I think the guys are starting to figure out that there are certain areas of the body that you just kind of want to leave alone that can get easily tweaked by the repetitiveness of making hard, fast swings on muscles that are a little bit on the bulging side, hence problems today, problems with Rory McIlroy. I think Rory is going to be fine. I think it's the Dustin Johnson formula, taking it easy, resting, not letting himself hit the ball too hard. But I think he'll be in fine fettle when we come in because he's been able to practice, maybe not at full bore as he would like to, but it's probably in his best interest that he's been taking it at a 75% rate leading into the championship rather than making the hard swings that we're accustomed to seeing him make with the longer golf clubs.
You also mentioned another player that I'm taking a long look at, Jason Day. And you brought up Ricky Fowler's name, too. There's a guy who has not built up his chest, who can be as long as everybody else and can go very, very low. Although he may be a more solid pick for a PGA championship this year because he's won at Quail Hollow. It won't be the same exact Quail Hollow. The first six holes are different. But, you know, you do have to give extra points to a guy going back to a place where he won. Two last names I'll throw out to you, and then we're going to go to break. I also am keeping an eye on Webb Simpson, who's playing very well, and Louis Westhuizen, who tends to play well in the biggest tournaments.
Yeah, you know, those are tricky picks because Webb is wildly inconsistent and has been for several years, and Louis Oosthuizen hasn't won a stroke play tournament in this country. I mean, you would think if you had...
Isn't it more a happenstance, though, than a trend? I mean, you know, isn't that more just an odd anomaly than something that we can really hang our hat on?
I think so, partly, but, you know, he has so many other interests that seem to take up his time, his imagination, and his energy. He's always on tractors at his farm. He doesn't seem to get fussed when he doesn't win. A lot of times, if he's not in contention, he just sort of plays out the string like Trevino used to do. If Trevino wasn't going to finish in the, you know, near the top of the heap. He would just go through the motions on the weekend, where Gary Player would fight hard to finish in 39th place out of 40th place. And I would say that Lee Trevino and Louis Oosthuizen had more in common with each other than either of them did with Gary. But, you know, Louis' swing, you would think if you had his swing that you would never be in trouble and never make a mistake. And, of course, he was unfortunate to lose that playoff at the Masters a few years ago when Bubba hit that incredible hooking iron out of the trees. But, yes, I like his chances. He's a very straight driver of the golf ball. He's kind of unflappable, which is good, and sometimes teeters into disinterest when he's not playing, you know, up to snuff. But I like his chances of certainly being very competitive. Webb Simpson, I think, is a player who has to get off to a great start or he'll get lost in the shuffle. But he's been playing some good golf of late. You know, he's won a U.S. Open. I was there. I watched him play some magnificent golf. He's somebody certainly to keep an eye on, but he's not on my short list.
Everybody, you're listening to Peter Kessler on the Jay's Play Show. I am Jay Flummer of the Golf News Network. We will be right back after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.